Welcome to This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, a weekly show where we interview the people making the magic happen in the UK craft beer scene, sponsored by Beer Nuts, premium crunchy coated peanuts for beer. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Alex Rattray from S43 in Durham. S43, founded in 2012, originally named Sonnet 43, having built a solid reputation for cask beers in the Northeast, hired Texan Alex Rattray in December 2018 with 10 years brewing experience in San Antonio, Texas, to head up a focus on progressive American craft beer styles. So Alex, welcome to the podcast. I really want to dig into how your move to S43 came about. But first, please give us a bit of your backstory.
Thanks for having me. So yeah, originally from Texas, although very originally I was actually born in the UK. So me coming back here is kind of full circle. So I was born here, and then when I was about 6 or 7, my parents moved back to the States. So yeah, I consider myself a Texan. But so my background, when I got into brewing, I was working in an office doing just kind of fresh out of university and was not really enjoying the office life. And my brother got me a home brewing kit for my birthday. And before that, I'd been into some craft beers. I thankfully kind of skipped this step that a lot of people have where they drink really nasty stuff during university. But for whatever reason, I didn't really like that stuff. So I just never really drank much beer at all. And then until I was about 22, because in drinking age is 21 in the US. So
yes,
about 22, at the grocery store, they would have these like little mix six, you could like build your own six pack kind of a thing. And I just started grabbing some stuff, and it was pretty easy, you know, approachable stuff. It was like strawberry blondes and wheat beers and that kind of thing. But yeah, I just started really getting interested in craft beer, just drinking it. And then my brother got me a homebrew kit. It was a really cheesy homebrew kit. I mean, calling it a homebrew kit, I think is even a really nice way of putting it. But it was it's called a Mr. Beer kit, if you've ever seen one of those. It's like you get this little plastic container that looks like a barrel, and it's almost just like kind of reconstituting syrup and then throwing some yeast in and then bottling it. But it came with this little book, and it had kind of a little history of brewing. And just read it cover to cover a couple of times. I just got really interested in it. And then I started brewing all the time. We were in a pretty tiny flat at the time. You know, you would put out about 24 or 25 bottles at a time. And then they have to sit out and carbonate. It takes a couple of weeks. And so our flat was just kind of brimming over with all this beer. Then I upgraded my brewing kit and got it in like a proper one. And then got into all grain brewing from there. And I started taking bottles of beer to work, just really giving them away, just like get them out of the house essentially. And people were saying they were really enjoying it. And then I started charging people. I would charge them $1 a bottle, which is highly illegal. But I would literally, at the end of work, like on a Friday, I would have a couple of cases in my trunk, and I would go out there, and there'd be a couple people come out there, and you know, they'd buy 5 or 6 for $1.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's kind of how my shady brewing began. And I think at the time, I think most people that homebrew at some point, they kind of have this dream of like, maybe I could open a brewery, do it for a living. I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing at the time. My brother was a chef, really had a bug to kind of open his own restaurant. And then we were doing a lot of traveling on the weekends. In Texas, we'd go drive somewhere on a Saturday, like up to Austin or something, go visit a couple of breweries and, you know, hit up a couple of like barbecue places or something and just kind of with our wives and just hang out. And so during some of those, we just kind of started brainstorming and just talking, be like, oh man, wouldn't it be so cool if we opened a place in San Antonio? San Antonio at the time, I think it had like 2 or 3 breweries, which was really sad for how big of a city it was. Yeah, we just kind of, what if we made everything from scratch, did the beer? And so, yeah, that's what we ended up doing. A couple of years later, we opened up kind of a small, what we call a brew pub in the States, but you know, it was a restaurant with a brewery attached to it. So this was a place called the Granary. And so I ran that with my brother. He did all the kitchen stuff. I helped run the restaurant, do all the brewing. We had kind of a small brew setup. So we had like 4 or 5 beers on tap and yeah, did that for a while. And then I just got really burned out. Like restaurants are a lot of work, and we were working like 80, 90 hours a week for about a good year and a half solid. And it did start to kind of lighten up. But, you know, when you're the owner, you're never off. And so I was just getting really burned out with it. And also, like, I'd gotten into it because I wanted to brew beer, and I was only spending maybe about 15% of my time doing that, and the rest of my time I was spent working on the restaurant side of things. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I decided to sell my part of it to my brother, and then I got hired on at Freetail.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Freetail is one of the biggest in San Antonio, and that's really where I kind of cut my teeth on a lot. I worked for a guy named Jason Davis, who'd been one of the creators of the beer scene in San Antonio. He'd come from Austin, kind of had a cool story of, like, he was washing dishes in this brew pub, and they grabbed him one day to help out, you know, mash in or whatever, and then mm-hmm. he started helping out more and then became the brewer there. And nice. So he'd been brewing for 20 plus years. Mm. And at Freetail, we did everything. So we had kind of like a West Coast style IPA. That was our hallmark. And then we had a German style Helles. Those were our two most popular beers, but we did everything from, we did a lot of sour barrel aged stuff. We did a lot of big Imperial stouts, aged in different kinds of barrels, and then started to get into kind of hazy IPAs and that kind of stuff towards the end of my tenure there. So,
right. So how did the S43 conversation start?
Yeah. So I'd been at Freetail for a little while, and, there wasn't really anywhere for me to move up within the company. The founder was basically the guy in charge. There wasn't really going to be another position anytime for me there. And I just wanted to take on some more responsibility and do a bit more different stuff. And at the same time, I think my wife and I were just really, we were just really fancy to change. We love San Antonio, but I've been there most of my life. She'd been there since we got married. We lived downtown where all the buzz was and everything, which was great, but we were looking to start a family and we're kind of ready to get out of the big city, I think. And I looked at several other places in the States where I could move. And it just seemed like it'd be a net gain. Like I could get a pay increase, get a job with some, you know, more responsibility, but the cost of living would just kind of negate it. So,
right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we, you know, I'd always had a love for the UK. I'd spent a term here in London at a study abroad.
Okay, nice.
And then my wife and I came over for about a 3-week holiday a couple years ago. And we kind of did a lot of the rural England. So we didn't do London or anything. We went like up to Isle of Skye and mm-hmm. Did some stuff in Oxford and down in Dorset and just tried to get, you know, stayed at B&Bs and mm-hmm. try to get out as many farms and stuff as we could. And we just loved kind of a little slower pace of life, and we loved the pub culture. And mm-hmm. so, yeah. And I think I'd done some seeing online that it seemed like the craft beer scene was really starting to kick off here.
Right.
And so I thought, well, maybe my resume CV would be really attractive to a brewery, and we could kind of, you know, just have it'd be one of the few places you could go for us to live in a foreign country where you still spoke the language, and it wouldn't be like a drastic culture shift. Although right. I think it is probably a drastic culture shift. not quite like if we went and moved to, you know, the Ukraine or something.
No, I understand the point. Absolutely. Yeah. And so the conversation with, as it was, Sonic 43 at the time, how long was that sort of in the making?
Yeah. So I started just looking for postings of breweries in the UK. And the other thing was I was really interested in cask style beer.
Right.
And when I'd come over on a holiday, that's all I drank. for an American to drink nothing but like 4.5% beers and under, that's in the craft circles, that's pretty unheard of. But yes. So, you know, having this really flavorful kind of low ABV stuff, I was really interested in kind of learning that side of things. Yeah, so I applied for a bunch of different jobs. And then in the spring of 2018, Sonnet 43 put up a posting that they were looking for a senior craft brewer. And I'd never heard of Durham or certainly not Coxo, which is the village that we're located in. And yeah, it just seemed like it was really fit, like kind of what they wanted to do. And they were doing cask already, but wanted to bring somebody in that had some knowledge of doing more, you know, progressive craft stuff. And yes, yeah, I sent a cover letter in, and the owner reached out, set up a Skype interview. And then a few weeks later, did another interview with one of the managers. And then they offered me the job. At that point, it was obviously very complicated because I'm on a visa. So fortunately, it wasn't just like, you know, here's the job, come over whenever you want. So the visa process was probably about a 4-month long ordeal with lots of paperwork and delays. And my wife was heavily pregnant at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we almost weren't able to make it because she flew over with about 5 weeks left.
Oh, wow.
Anything later than that, we would not have probably been
able to. No. My understanding is you arrived in Durham late 2018, right? So you've already lived there through two winters, having come from San Antonio, Texas, and yet you're still there. So how is that, you know?
Yeah, so I think what people don't realize that Texas summers are, to me, Texas summers are worse than Durham winters are. Because at least, you know, you can walk into a pub and it's got this fire and you can, you know, eat some hot food, or you can go in your warm, you know, go in your house and warm up. In Texas, especially if you work in a brewery, you know, you're working without any air conditioning or anything. And you can never cool down. You go out to your car and your car is literally like a greenhouse. And then you go home and your house is hot. And it just, there's no relenting of the heat. And I much prefer the cold than heat. So, I think this last winter was much better. It seemed a bit milder than we just gotten here, and like 2 weeks later in October, when we first arrived, it snowed, and that freaked me out a little bit. I was like, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into? But apparently that was a bit of an aberration, so it was fine. So so we're okay with it. We love the English summers, and the winters aren't too bad. So,
all right, well, that's good to hear. Oh, wow. Got lots more questions about that story arc, Alex, but let's just talk about this first beer. I've just had a couple of sips already. It's delicious. This is Gold Pineapple, 6.1% IPA. Denali, Azaka, and Sabro are the hops with some pineapple puree and lactose. It's delicious. The tasting notes that I read before I tasted it suggested that it was going to come up a bit sweeter than this, which is actually a relief, to be honest with you. I think the ingredients list there, it's a surprise to me that with the description that I read, that it's such a beautifully balanced beer. You know, the flavor profile is lovely, but it has moderate bitterness, just a hint of sourness, I think, as well. And so, yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on the beer and what you were aiming for and where you're going to take it next.
Yeah, so we've done quite a few fruit pales or IPAs. Well, not quite a few, a couple. And so pineapple seemed like, you know, a pretty logical choice for us to go. So I started working on the recipe. I was conscious. So we've done some milkshake IPAs before, and I didn't want it to be a milkshake pineapple IPA. You know, we just call it a pineapple IPA. I think people freak out a little bit when they see lactose on there. So like in comparison, if anybody's had one of our milkshake IPAs before, I used about 8% of the amount of lactose in this beer than I would in a milkshake IPA.
Oh, wow.
So it's really just, the idea was just because pineapple, I think when you think of pineapple, you think very sweet. But when you eat an actual pineapple, there is sweetness, but it's also, unless it's been soaked in syrup or something.
Yeah, it depends on the degree of ripeness as well, doesn't it? I mean, you know, sort of a slightly underripe pineapple is really quite tart, isn't it?
And it's got a nice acidic bite to it. So that was kind of more of what I was wanting. So the whole point of adding lactose was just to help balance that acidity out. I'd used pineapple purees before, and they don't have a ton of sweetness to them. At least when, and then obviously the beer, you know, the yeast is going to ferment some of that sweetness out as well. And then, yeah, I've used Sabro a couple of times, and I think I'm like easing into it. I think I had a Sabro beer when it first came out, and I really did not like it. And so I think just like that put a mental block in my head, like, I don't like Sabro. But I used it in another beer we did called Tropic Fruit Punch. It was a pale that had pineapple and mango in it, but I wanted more of the Sabro to come out. So I thought it might be a nice compliment to get a bit of that coconutty, even a little bit of that mintiness to come out and just help balance it. And then Denali, I really enjoy, and I always get a lot of pineapple notes out of Denali typically.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Use it later. And so, yeah, just conscious when I was doing the hopping schedule and things, like, still wanted some bitterness to it. I think, like, when you look at some of the reviews of it, and reviews are always interesting anyway, but I think people's expectations, it so colors like what you think of the beer. And like, with this beer, I didn't want it to be a pineapple smoothie kind of beer. I wanted it to be an IPA with some pineapple in addition to it. So like, I still wanted the hops to be able to be showcased, and I still want some bitterness. I still wanted to drink like a beer and not just like a fruit juice. I think many people may disagree to just be like straight up pineapple juice. But I think at that point, like, I just, you know, I'd save most of the hops and just do like a pineapple ale, essentially, with some dry hopping in there if that's what I wanted to do. But so, yeah, so I was fairly happy with how it came out. I think it definitely helps when you let it warm up a bit. I think the pineapple notes are much more subdued when it's really fresh right out the fridge. So I would just let it warm up, you know, 5-10 minutes. And I think the pineapple really starts to open up. But yeah, I think it's just I like doing different kinds of IPAs. So, and I think fruit is an obvious, you know, with all these modern hops, fruit's an obvious choice to do some different stuff with.
No, definitely. What would be the evolution of this beer? I mean, have you got the next step in mind?
Funny enough, I think we may like give fruit IPAs like a bit of a break. Yeah, I think, and this gets into like a bigger question, but I think sometimes just like we're trying to constantly walk that line of like what we want to brew and then versus kind of what people's expectations are as well. So I do think like the next couple of IPAs we're going to do probably a bit more, not traditional, but a bit more just kind of like a modern, straightforward hazy beer that all of the fruit essentially is just coming from the yeast and the hops.
Right. Yep.
So I do want to do a pineapple milkshake IPA. So I would like to do like a pineapple coconut actual, you know, just a juice bomb and tons of lactose and vanilla and stuff. But that's just not what I wanted to do with this particular beer. So that's certainly in the cards, I think, for maybe later in the year, maybe in a couple months, revisit that. But I've had a pina colada kind of style milkshake IPA from Amundsen, I think it was.
Right. Yeah, Norway.
It was really good. Mm-hmm. Not something I'd want to drink a lot of, but it was really tasty. So,
they're a great brewery. They have some fantastic flavors in their beers. So yeah, the dessert in a can series have been wonderful, haven't they? The Imperial Stouts lately.
They're wonderful, but then it also makes me be like, man, I wish I could brew a beer like that sometimes.
Well, that's the idea, isn't it? It's always, sort of challenge yourself with what you're seeing others doing. Let's switch back into the evolution of S43, Alex, because I think it's fair to say that what S43 achieved in the past 18 months is what perhaps as many as 1,000 breweries in the UK are desperately trying to figure out right now, by which I mean building on a solid local cask beer reputation and leveraging that to ride the craft beer wave to a national or international market. And you guys seem to have trapped lightning in the bottle with the way that you've accomplished that. I'm sure a lot of that is down to your expertise, but obviously with the backing and support you've received from the business, I'm sure as well. But honestly, I can only think of one other British brewery that has accomplished something similar, and that would be your relatively close neighbours, Wylam, just up the road. I honestly can't think of another one that has, I wouldn't say pivoted, but expanded their range so effectively and successfully as you have. So talk us through that. How have you pulled it off? And
I wish I knew. No. Well, and I think from the guys that were kind of leading the company, I think Wylam was the inspiration and the goal for doing something like that. Of course, me coming over to the UK, I had no idea who Wylam was. sort of got acquainted with their beers very quickly and was really loving them. So it's been a really, it is a really tricky thing to do. And I think that's probably why you don't see more doing it. It's so strange because cask beer and craft, if you want to call it craft, I mean, they're almost like don't exist on the same planet. Everything from the ground up for how you design a beer recipe, how you take care of the beer, how you package the beer, it's all completely different. And so I think for, a cask brewer you almost have to unlearn what you've been taught. Yes. And I think, cask is so, which is one of the things that makes it so amazing is it has all this tradition and stuff. Yep. The problem is though, you get really rigid and then you think, well, I've been brewing beer for 20 years or we've been brewing it this way for 200 years. And so this is the way to do it. Whereas I think my experience was so different coming from the US because the US craft beer scene is so new. And so nobody's been doing it for really that long. And so nobody's really stuck in with like, well, you only do this with this beer, you only do that. And so I think that's one of the things that's amazing about the US craft breweries is just that it's just, there are no rules, which can get you into trouble, but it's never an issue of like constantly trying to reinvent, like everybody's reinventing all the time. So I definitely hit that when I came here is just this, almost like a wall of, well, we know how to take care of the beer. And it was like an aversion to trying different things, which was just a very foreign concept for me. And I think, it's been challenging. And even from like an equipment standpoint, so our brewery is set up to do 4.5% low hops, whole leaf hop cask beers. And then, they bring me over and they're like, okay, now make a New England IPA on it. And it's like, well, it's not really set up to do that. You're trying to make this thing do something it was never created to do. And then plus like we just infrastructure wise, we didn't have CO2, we didn't have oxygen. It's like really basic, like for me coming from the US, you can't start a brewery without those things because there is no cask beer in the US. So to start a brewery, you have to be kegging and canning pretty much from day one.
Yep.
So it was a bit of culture shock when I came over, just be like, oh man, like we have to, you know, almost basically start over again, but at the same time, still maintain all the cast production that we're doing and then try to squeeze in this craft stuff as well. So it was really tricky. We started off really small. We were doing about 2,000 liters of craft a month. And that was partly just because that was all the tank space that we had. We had two tanks that we could do it in. All the other tanks were open top fermenters that we couldn't do. You know, you can't carbonate them, you can't can them. So that was a huge limitation out of the get go. And then we were still trying to feed the kind of the cask. The other, I hate to say downside, but part of the downside is cask is it's volume based. It's a cheap pint, and you don't get very much for it as a brewer. And so the only way you can make money is you got to make a lot of it.
Yeah. And
so it was really hard to try to get the company to pivot, because it was like, well, this is where our cash flow is. So we can't turn that off and also invest in this other equipment and stuff that we really need. So it was a really slow, and I think it took everybody a while to kind of get their head around it. And I think ultimately what we kind of had to do, and it really actually hasn't happened until lockdown, when we were basically forced to do it. And it was like, okay, like all the attention now goes on to our craft stuff because the pubs are shut and nobody's buying cask beer. And so in a really strange way, it's hurt us plenty, but lockdown's actually helped us, I think, with our vision, because it has finally solidified, like, yeah, we want to be a craft brewery that does cask beer as well and does cask beer well. I think maybe for a while we were trying to do both and trying to keep them both completely separate, and it just never really felt like they played well with each other. And so I think once that's kind of happened, then I think that's made things a lot easier.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. It's, as you say, it's forced the focus on your side of the house, if I might use such a phrase. It's worked out spectacularly, I think, hasn't it? Obviously, you'd already got the branding in place and the social media presence and all of that stuff for a while now. You've had very close attention, I think, to the way that you've been building out that persona, and that's I think is very effective, and I'm sure that's paid great dividends in this time. But also you've now had to really double down on the web shop, and that's clearly going to be something that is important to you for the future. Are you expecting to start to sell more beer in kegs as the lockdown sort of continues to ease, or will you still be canning the majority of your beers, Alex?
Yeah, I think the majority of our stuff is still going to go in a can for a while. So as of late, we've been canning every 4 or 5 weeks. We can a couple of beers, and we use mobile canners. So part of it is just kind of when their availability is. But coming up soon, we'll be able to can twice a month. So that'll really help. And we've also got these two new tanks in. It's going to help as well. So we will be doing some more keg, but I think we'll probably still be 80 to 85% can until we see a significant change in the market. Before lockdown, we would usually do almost about a 50-50 split, about half of it going to keg and half of it going to can. I think part of the issue is just because we're still very new to the craft scene. So a lot of our accounts are mostly, you know, bottle shops, independent bottle shops. And so not everybody has keg beer, and not everybody moves through a lot of keg beer. And that's kind of our prime place where we would put in our kegs, because they're, you know, when you're doing these really highly hopped beers, they're not cheap. And so it's hard for a pub, unless it's really known for craft beer. I think it's hard to get a pub landlord sometimes to commit to spending the price on some of these beers.
No,
bottle shop, they don't even like ask you half the time what the price is, because they know, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, this is what people come in to start.
Yeah, we just, you know, you mark it up and it will sell. That's it. You know, but I do think that the reputation that you've built during lockdown on the craft side would mean that your kegs would fly as soon as you made them available on eBrewer or, you know, whatever your distributor is. I think there's a pent-up demand. I was recording with Full Circle a couple of weeks ago. You're again another of your close neighbors.
Yeah,
you know, and they were saying that they're just getting knocked over in the rush now for their beer and keg, the point where they're struggling to have enough keg beer available for their own tap room, because you know, it's a first world problem. I'm quite sure that your beer would fly just as quickly in keg if you were to make it available. And it's not, as you say, it's not going to go into your traditional cask pubs. It would be going into the specialist tap rooms, but there's quite a few of those around now, and the demand is there.
So we've got, typically for every beer that we do, at least as of late, we've had a handful of kegs. So we order a certain number of cans that we know we can fill. and then everything else goes into a keg. So but usually we only get anywhere from like 4 to 10 kegs per batch. So there are a handful. So there's a couple of our places that we deal with that we know always want a keg. So there's a place in Durham called Hop Knocker that's been a great, he put our beers on when we first brewed them, the first craft stuff we did. He's been a great account for us. And then there's a couple of other places kind of close afield that we know that will be interested in a keg or two. So I think, and then we've got a couple of other beers that are be a bit more approachable. And I think we're going to go a bit heavier in keg on some of those as well. A little lower ABV and a little bit, you know, not quite as heavily hopped and things.
Right. So,
I mean, if it was up to me, we'd put it all in keg. just so much better for the beer, and what people get when they get a glass of it is just so much more of what you intend. Like I, as a brewer, I hate putting stuff into cans because I don't know where it's going to get stored when it goes to a shop, and I don't know where it's going to get stored when it goes to somebody's house, and you know if it's been rolling around in the back of their car for over something. You know, it's just. I would much prefer everything went in a keg. So, but I, hopefully that will start shifting more towards that way. But I think for us, I think the cans will still be pretty big for us. And I think if we had the volume space, we would actually, like, I would love to do like a whole batch in the can and a whole batch in a keg, but we just don't have the space. So.
No. What is the production capacity now on the craft beer side?
As of January, we were still only able to do 2,000 liters. And then we got two more tanks that we purchased a few months ago that arrived in February. And then because things had gotten, there was just, the demand was so high during lockdown, we were able to lease two more tanks that just arrived a couple of days ago. So now we have six tanks essentially that we can use. So we can do maybe about 6,500 liters of craft a month, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Which still is not much. So.
And what does that relate to in terms of brews? I mean, how many beers per month are you brewing?
So basically one brew per tank. So they're all just like single. So we're usually putting in about 14 to 1500 liters into the FV. And then obviously with loss and everything, we get about 1100 out into the actual package stuff, which is we get maybe like the most we get per brew of cases. You know, we do like 24 cases of 440 mil cans. The most we can get is about 100 cases.
Right.
So it'd be about 600 cases, 650 cases max per month. So it's not a lot.
And that stuff is selling out pretty rapidly on the web shop.
Yeah. I don't know if any of our, we've got our craft sales guy, JT, he just started with us at the beginning of the year. That's the other interesting thing. We have two guys in the office and they're both almost brand new. They supposed started right before lockdown. So there's been kind of a weird switch around as well. But so right now the brewery is just running with four people. So, if JT's listening, I was joking that I've made his job really easy because it's just because we don't have a lot of beer. We just, you know, they just call up somebody, be like, hey, we got a new beer. You want a case of each? Okay, great. And they just call us the next guy. So it won't always be like that. But when you don't have a ton of beer, then it's living the good life in that sense, but we just can't make very much of it. So,
and have you restarted cask production?
Just restarted cask production a couple weeks ago.
Okay,
so we brought one of our other brewers back. So he's the original brewer that started with the company back in 2012.
Okay.
And so now we've kind of gotten this nice rhythm together. So I'm brewing all of our craft stuff and then he helps me on those brewing days. And then he's brewing pretty much most of the cask stuff. And then I help him on those brewing days. And then we just kind of split the rest of the duties, especially with lockdown and coming back from it. Nobody has a lot of job titles at this point. There's just like a boatload of work. We just have to kind of figure out how to get it done. So.
You know, chatting to Ross Holland at Alpha Delta a few weeks ago, you know, he was literally running the brewery on his own, you know, for a couple of months during lockdown, which is mind-boggling really to me that it's answering the phone. And
that was so when I, because originally we furloughed everybody and then we had no intention of like selling the beer online. It was basically we just threw it up online right before lockdown. I was like, well, maybe because we had just done a canning run like a week before, we're like, well, maybe we'll sell some on this way. And then all of a sudden over about a week or two, it just started picking up, and people were responding, buying. And so I came back after a few weeks to start brewing.
Are you influencing the cask recipes at all, Alex?
So, So last year we were doing lots of cask specials. So we were doing about two cask specials a month. So I was doing all of those. And then funny enough, right before lockdown, we had revamped the range. We kind of trimmed our cask range down a bit to now it's just four core beers. So I created three of them. And then the other one, the holdover is the Raven, which is the...
Right, which is, yeah, that's kind of your signature beer, isn't it, for the brewery? Yeah, yeah.
That one's been around almost since day one.
Yeah.
And then then I created three new ones for the cask range. So, yeah, so I enjoy doing recipe development. So I think last year, between the craft and the cask, I think we put out maybe like 45 new beers, which was a lot for me. I've never done anything close to that many. So it's been a stretch. And then this year we'll probably get pretty close just because now we're doing so much more craft. I'll probably get pretty close to that number again, I think.
Very good. Please join us after a short break when we talk about the one we can't talk about. And Alex shares his exciting hopes for the future at S43. This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, is sponsored by Beer Nuts. Beer Nuts is a British company inspired by the European fashion for pairing savoury snacks with different beer styles. Beer Nuts are premium crunchy-coated peanuts and come in three great flavours, Classic, Masala Curry and Jalapeno. They are packaged in 100% recyclable, plastic-free single-serve cans and are vegan-friendly. Next day delivery is available from their webshop at beernuts.co.uk, spelled B-I-E-R. Beer Nuts are the ultimate beer pairing snack, perfect for pubs, tap rooms, bars, bottle shops and more. For details of a special offer, please see page 7 of our weekly newsletter at thisweekincraft.beer. So I'm back with Alex from S43. Alex, I'd like to talk very briefly about the one we can't talk about. It strikes me that nothing generates more publicity in the UK than a small business receiving a cease and desist letter from a big company. The British press love that. The underdog mentality really comes through there. And I expect that this episode has significantly expanded the public awareness of S43, certainly the general public perception anyway, sort of outside of our little sort of craft beer bubble. So yeah, give us what you can say without incurring the wrath of the lawyers on that episode.
Yeah, and it's probably us just being a bit naive, but I think when the guy designed the label, we just all thought, oh, that's kind of funny. You know, it's kind of gimmicky, but it's a really eye-catching label. And we just really didn't think much of it. I think, again, we're a tiny brewery in Coxo, a small village outside of Durham. So we're not like the epicenter of craft beer or, you know, big corporate conglomerates. So, but yeah, and I think people really latched on to the label and to the beer. And so, yeah, I think it was a bit of a badge of honor to at least the guy that designed the label, and that we're important enough apparently to get a cease and desist letter. So, and it was a very friendly, well, I guess as friendly as a cease and desist letter could be. But it worked out well for us because we'd only ever planned to brew it once anyway. And so once it was already sold, you know, within a few days anyway. So we just had to remove some stuff from our social media and things. But yeah, I think some people outside of the craft beer world maybe heard about us. So, and I think to me, it's important to handle these things. Like, we don't want to give craft beer a bad name. And I think we do play a lot with the blurry lines in craft beer as far as intellectual property goes and things like that. And I think just because there's, you know, most craft beers are so small, you can kind of slide under the radar. So I think it's important to handle things, you know, in a good way. And I think we did, hopefully. And so we are rebrewing the beer under a different name, as you said, the one that we can't talk about. And I am changing up the recipe a little bit because I wasn't super happy with how it came out the first time. So what's funny is it was never even designed to be an imitation of that chocolate bar. It was actually came out of a discussion we were coming up with. We didn't have a good name for it. It was just a Imperial Peanut Butter Fudge Stout. And during some of the tasting times, I had said, oh, it smells like a Snickers bar. Like, that's kind of what it reminds me of. There's just like this roasted peanut thing. And then I think the guy that designed the label kind of just ran with that. and I was a bit worried when I first saw the label because I was like, oh, geez, like, I didn't make it. I didn't brew a beer to
that's
make
all
it.
Your fault.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't make it to be that. And so it was more like peanut butter and things. So, but yeah, it's been a really interesting journey. We'll see. I'm excited to get this. So I rebrewed it last week.
Okay, great.
A new improved recipe that's a bit different. And so that should be coming out in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Well, it's my duty to put in a request for more peanut butter adjunctive beers, if there is such a word. I was lucky enough to have a peanut butter black lager 18 months ago in a wonderful craft brewery in New Jersey, and it was absolutely superb. A place called Beach House. It's sort of just up the coast from Atlantic City, but lovely, lovely beer. And you know, I think peanut butter is a great adjunct for beer. I might not be a good judge on the subject, but I'll always buy them.
I think it's a love or hate thing. I think the people that love them absolutely love them. You can never tell them anything else. And I think there's a lot of people that are anti peanut butter and beer. But
excellent. So I've moved on, and I believe you have a glass of this as well, Alex, to the Dank Night. 8.5% double IPA, Columbus in the boil, and dry hopped with Chinook, Citra, and Amarillo. Beautiful citrus and tropical fruit flavors from my perspective. Lots of pine, which is key for the balance, certainly. You know, otherwise it becomes, as you say, a glass of fruit juice. Beautiful soft body, but a lovely bitter finish. Just, you know, it's as we were just discussing off air, double IPAs are the hallmark of our wonderful craft beer scene at the moment, and you know, this is a very good example, Alex.
Thank you. So I think this style of beer, I think this is what I really enjoy brewing the most. So I love, you know, New England IPAs and really hazy stuff, but I grew up on West Coast IPAs. And so I do find sometimes with the really fruity stuff that doesn't have any bitterness, I enjoy it, but I feel about halfway through the glass, I just want some more bitterness. Mm. And so I think if an S43, if we become known for anything, what I'd love to become known for is this style of beer where it's hazy and it's fruity and it's juicy, but then it has this really nice backbone of bitterness that hopefully doesn't fight with that juiciness, but it just helps complement it and kind of helps clean your palate a little bit so that it makes it very drinkable at the same time. So that's just, I really enjoy that kind of thing. And so you probably know Dank Money was a beer that we brewed right before lockdown. And I think that might have been the beer that kind of put us on some people's maps.
You're over the top, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and again, it was done in that same style. So we used fruity stuff, but then a lot of Columbus, which tends to have, you know, Columbus is not a super fruity hop. It tends to be very resiny and piney and very dank. And so we used a ton of Columbus in that, as well as some citrus, some Simcoe, and I can't remember, there's another hop. So I think, again, that was in that same vein where it had a lot of nice juiciness. We were using kind of a New England style yeast to put off a lot of really nice esters and some really nice fruitiness. But I intentionally didn't try to minimize the bitterness as much as possible. So put in some hot side hops and put in some kind of higher alpha hot side hops. Yeah. And then with the dry hopping, made sure that there was equal parts of some fruity stuff as well. And even Citra, you know, as fruity as Citra is, it has a nice kind of dank quality to it as well. Mm. And you can definitely get some pine to it. So I think these kind of dank IPAs that we've started calling them, that's what I really love to do. And I think it's a bit different. Not that we're certainly not the only people doing it. You know, there's tons of people that do beers like this. They just don't typically call them a dank IPA. We just kind of liked that term. And so we've done, I think this is our third one. And so I just think it helps hopefully set people's expectations a little bit, because obviously if you dive into this beer expecting, you know, a Daya kind of fruit juice bomb, which I love Daya, they're one of my favorite breweries, I think you're going to be disappointed and a bit kind of taken aback. I think maybe on this beer, the bitterness could be dialed back maybe slightly, but it's intended to have a nice solid bitterness to it. So it kind of, hopefully, I like beers that kind of bridge that gap between kind of the old school West Coast and kind of these new fruity stuff.
So. Totally agree. And I think that so many beers fall into the IPA category now, don't they? That we need more descriptive terms to subdivide them. And so I think you're spot on by using that descriptor, the dank IPA or dank double IPA in this case, so, you know, because it gives people much better idea what's in the can. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think the term IPA has changed so much in this last couple of years. And a few years ago, if somebody gave you an IPA and it wasn't clear, you wouldn't know what was going on. And now if somebody gives you one that's clear, I almost have the same reaction. It's like, oh, that's not what I was expecting. And it's just so weird how that can change so quickly. And how we brew IPAs now is just so different. And I feel like someone had mentioned, we just did a West Coast. And I think a couple of people have mentioned it wasn't like quite as bitter as they were expecting. And I think that was almost me, like I've been brewing so many kind of soft, low bitterness beers. I think when I started designing that recipe, I think I was almost a bit gun shy about how many hops I normally put in the earlier stages of the boil. And I think I probably pulled back a little bit just because, you know, I'm so used to trying to reduce that bitterness as much as possible. So.
No, I think that makes sense. And the question is, almost everything these days is an evolution of the existing styles, isn't it? And so I heard a beers described as Great Lakes IPAs these days as being the midpoint between the New England and the West Coast. And I don't know whether that's a good turn of phrase or not, but I think that's a lot of the best examples these days are bridging that gap, aren't they? You know, we probably went too far towards the, sort of the sweet fruity juice beers and arguably it needed dialing back a bit in order for that style to prevail and persist. As you were saying earlier on, it would have been easy to expect it to be a fad and not to last. It clearly is here to stay. And I think that one of the things that's going to give it longevity is to bring some bitterness back into the mix.
Yeah, I think it's nice that there's so much room to have all these kinds of different IPAs, and there doesn't have to be a right or wrong IPA. I do love the good juice bomb, but I find I don't drink as much of them. I drink one and I find it satisfying. I don't want to drink more than that. Whereas something with a bit more bitterness, I do find I'm happy to drink more of it. So
that's an interesting point. When you're brewing a beer, are you trying to brew a beer that people are going to go into raptures over on Instagram and Untappd, but probably not want a second? Or are you trying to brew a beer that people are going to want to drink 3 or 4 pints of? You know, what is your, when you're devising a recipe, what's your...
Yeah, I think for me, I think I try to look at it in the situation that we're in right now, we're releasing kind of multiple beers at a time. And so I try to make sure there's diversity within that release, whether we're doing 2, 3, or 4 different beers. So if we're going to do something like this Dank Night, I want to do something that's easier drinking. So we did a double dry hopped pale. That, you know, it's got a little bit of bitterness to it. It's nice and fruity. It's lower ABV. So that's something you could drink, you know, a couple of pints of. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it just depends on, again, just trying to have some diversity when I'm thinking about what we're releasing together. So because we have these long gaps in between our releases, typically just due to our canning schedule, I don't want to put out 3 juice bombs altogether. And I also don't want to put out 3 Dank Nights altogether. So that can be really challenging. And I think it's a good exercise, but it does push. I think that tends to create things like the pineapple IPA. I don't think I probably would have just thought it like, I just want to make a pineapple IPA, but it was kind of out of a necessity of, we have 2 other beers in this release. We need to do something else. I want to do something else hoppy, but I, you know, so what else can we do? And so I think it does kind of force you to get a bit creative. I don't want to just every release a hazy IPA and then a hazy double IPA and then a, you know, a hazy triple IPA and then a hazy, like I love those beers, but I just want a bit more diversity. And I think in our upcoming brews, now that we have a bit more tank space, you'll see us getting into some beers that I know for a fact are not going to be as popular. And I know won't get us big Untappd ratings. But I think it's important for us to be able to explore some different things. And just, you know, we all drink to some degree what we make. And so I think even just for us, like, we want to drink some other stuff as well. And I think as this is kind of a bigger question, but I think as the craft beer scene continues to develop, like, I want to be known as a diverse brewery. I don't want to just be known as like, oh, these guys do Dank Money and Dank Nine and that's great, but don't really do anything else. Mm-hmm. And so we have plans to do some sours soon, and to do some kind of non hype beers or whatever, you know, just normal beers. And so I hope people follow us through that, and maybe, like, yeah, they're not going to get as excited about something, but we'll also be dropping in plenty of more exciting beers as well. So I think for me, it's just having a diversity of styles that I think we want to continue. We just don't want to be, we don't want to pigeonholed, and we don't want to be a one trick pony. We've done quite a few milkshake IPAs. Well, not quite a few. I think we've done 2 or 3. And so that's something we continue want to do on occasion as well. But again, we don't want to be doing that all the time.
No, that's a great point. It's almost like you need to earn the right to diversify a bit. And I think you've probably got to the point now where you've got that loyalty of following that you can do that. You know, a couple of current or recent beers spring to mind. So Boxcar down in London have been getting great reviews on their Dark Mild, which I've, you know, I've had a couple of cans of, and is a terrific beer, you know, sub 4%, not where you'd expect craft beers to pitch these days. And I understand Northern Monk have just done an English bitter collab with Other Half. So those are both examples of brewers sort of straying off the reservation a bit. But I think it's great that they're bringing their sort of modern interpretation to those traditional beer styles. And there's so much out there that you can play with, isn't there? You know, beyond the rigid expectations of the market.
Yeah, and I think that's it's important. We'll find out if we've built up enough clout in order to do this. I may be changing my tune if, you know, they just bomb all of a sudden. But in the U.S., that's happened with a couple of beer styles that totally got just revitalized because a couple of small craft breweries started brewing them. Like Berliner Weiss is one that comes to mind. You know, nobody was drinking Berliner Weiss, you know, 8-9 years ago. And then a couple of small breweries started, you know, just out of necessity. It's like, it's hot outside and we want something. Yeah. You know, they were brewing double IPAs all the time. But it's like, man, like we're just going to sit here and get wasted if we have a couple of these in the middle of the summer. So like, can we make something that's still tons of flavor, but it's low ABV. And now in the U.S., like Berliner Weiss is just, and Goza is just an absolute, you know, you find few breweries that don't do them. Yeah. And they're obviously becoming hugely popular over here too.
Absolutely.
But that's like an old traditional style that has seen a modern interpretation. And, you know, now everybody is drinking those. So you never would have thought. So.
No. Let's pivot a little bit, Alex, to talk about the next 6 months or so for S43. It seems like we're cautiously emerging from lockdown. You know, whether we sort of get away with the path that we're on or not remains to be seen, but it does seem like it's going cautiously well at the moment. What are your plans in the next 6 months in terms of festivals, releases, developments on the brewery, tap room? I don't know. Talk to us about future plans in all of those different aspects, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got lots of hopes and dreams, so we'll see what actually happens. But yeah, so just if anybody's listening who doesn't know, so we're in basically a shed, like a glorified shed, next to a pub. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have a tap room or anything, and which is hard for me because I think coming from the U.S., tap room is like the lifeblood of the brewery. As the brewer, you meet all these regulars and you get feedback about the beer, and it's this community thing. And I love it. I really miss it. So that is certainly a hope that we can find. So we need to move spaces. We've needed to move for ever since I got here, we've been maxed out. So there's literally no more room to cram anything inside of the brewery. So we would love to at some point in 2021 be in a new space, you know, probably in Durham, or just right around Durham, you know, probably more like an industrial site that's close to Durham, but hopefully something that would still allow us to do a tap room on the weekends and have people come out and visit. So, and do like click and collect for their beers and stuff. So like right now we just started doing an option for pickup when people buy the cans from our web shop. But it's literally just like some guy strolling up in front of the shed, kind of like looking around, like, is this the place?
And like, if I come to the right place.
Yeah. And I come out in like gloves and I'm all soaking wet. And then I got to like go tell the guy in the office, like, oh, hey, somebody's here to get their beers. And so this is not a great, great process. So it'd be great for somebody to come, you know, have a pint, pick up the cans, do all that kind of stuff. So it's certainly a desire. And I think, it's just making it happen and getting the funding and all of those tricky things. But we definitely want to do that. You know, I think we're in a position where it's a first world problem, but it's still a problem kind of a thing. Whereas right now, we can't keep up with the demand at all, not even close. But that's a great thing. But at the same time, it's like we could be selling tons of beer that we can't make. Yeah. And so we'd love to be able to be able to expand, and we would love to be able to get more beer in more people's hands. And that would allow us to, again, kind of diversify what we can do. Do more stuff on keg and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so that's the hope. So I'd love to say that if I was sitting here talking to you in a year that we'd be in a new facility, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it partly depends upon, you know, what I was saying about how things evolve in the next few months, isn't it?
What I was going to say is I think for us too, or for me, like getting our own canning line is a huge thing. So right now we use mobile canners, and the guys we use are really great guys. But nobody is ever going to take as good care of beer as you will. And I think because so much of our product is going into can, it's not ideal because we can't can the beer at its peak. We have to brew it as best we can so that we hope it's at its peak when it's going into the can. But especially when we're trying to do two or three beers at a time, something like four beers at a time, it's just, it's tricky. Like in a normal brewery setup, you wouldn't be doing that. You know, you would just be like, okay, great. This is tasting great. Let's
It's absolutely at its peak. Let's do it right now. Yeah.
So I think for me, that's a huge desire, not only just expanding and getting proper equipment and getting like an actual brew kit that's designed to make these craft beers. But it's to be able to get our own canning line so that we can really put the beer in the can when it's the best.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Festivals, Alex, you know, is that something that's even on the radar at the moment?
So I don't know of any that are coming up. I mean, if somebody asks us to one, I would love to go. You know, we're certainly open to that. Obviously, if someone's organizing one, you would assume that it's going to be done in a safe manner. I'm sure there'll be people trying to tackle that. I wouldn't expect anything until next year, though.
No, I agree. I mean, I've got a ticket for Craft Beer Calling, which is Wylam's festival in October. Yep. But I must admit, I'm hopeful, no more than hopeful, that it'll go. But I think it's a really important part of reaching a new audience, isn't it? And you know, and building out that network, not just within the breweries, but also within the community that I'm sure you guys will be fully connected into next year. You know, as soon as it's a thing.
Yeah, there's so much fun, and it gives you a chance to meet some other brewers and hang out and also connect with people that are drinking the beer. So yeah, they're an amazing thing. So we hope that next year there'll be some more back on track.
Very good. I've got a question, Alex, which is this is shout out to Little Guy. I'm curious to know if there's another small local brewery in your general region. It doesn't need to be close, but it'd be great if it is that you're particularly impressed by, that you'd like to give a shout out to, that you know, maybe bring some custom their way.
Yeah, so I was trying to think, the ones that were coming to mind are all bigger than we are. So I'm not sure if it quite works that way, but you've already, I hate to shout out Full Circle because they're a larger brewery, but they're still relatively new. And full disclosure, I know Alex, the brewer, he's a really great guy. But I think they have done things really well. And from the get-go, have been producing. It's hard, I think, to open a brand new brewery on a larger scale and to have some really good beers right out the gate. And I think they've done that. I like the way they're brewing things. They're doing plenty of modern stuff, but I know that he also did a, like an American brown ale kind of recently.
Yeah. I've still got a can in my fridge. I had a couple of cans of it and I've still got one left called Kodiak, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Kodiak. Yeah,
really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So terrific. It's a bold move to do when you're a new brewery trying to break into the modern craft scene. So, they're not really small, so I'm not sure they really qualify. But they're really great guys and they do some really great beer. And every time I see them posting pictures on Instagram, I'm always jealous of other guys.
No, they're destined for greatness. What about back in the US? Is there anybody that you could, that springs to mind that we should be aware of in Texas?
So there's a brewery, called Pint House Pizza.
Pint House Pizza. Okay.
Pint House Pizza. So they have two locations in Austin and, they do this amazing pizza. And then they've got this just two small breweries crammed into the side of this building. And so they were one of the first breweries I was aware of in Austin to be doing like really amazing hazy beers, but that had this nice bitter backbone as well. So they have a beer called Electric Jellyfish that was like their kind of coming out party beer. And anytime I go back to the US or anytime anybody I know goes back to the US, I always try to get them to fill me up a crawler of that and bring it back. And it was just because it was in Texas, it's hot almost all the time. And so it had all this immense, you know, soft, sweet, juicy flavor, but it had this great kind of sharp, kind of bitter backbone, which maybe, I don't know, a lot of people might not like, but in Texas, it was a really popular thing. And, you know, you're sitting out on the patio when it's really hot outside and you're just drinking this hazy beer that is just so full of flavor, but it has this great kind of sharp bitterness that just, you know, you can just go pint after pint of it. And they do amazing pizza and some amazing beer. So if you're ever in Texas and Austin, that is an amazing place to go.
Perfect. Well, I have been to Austin a couple of times actually, because I used to work for a software company that was headquartered there, but it's obviously on my modern to-do list for Jester King. And so I will definitely get there on my beer journey at some point. I've done quite a lot of US craft beer drinking, and there's a lot more to come in the future, but probably not in 2020, unfortunately.
No, there are a few things better than going out to Jester King. Oh. It's in this beautiful rural area, and just drinking these beers that it does really transport you back to a different place in time, and they do some just fantastic stuff.
We were very lucky to have them at Cloudwater Friends and Family in February this year, which was almost practically the last event before the shutters came down on the world. And so, yeah, that was an amazing weekend, just a privilege to drink beers from so many great breweries in the same room.
It's a little funny factoid. So before I started the brewery, Jester King had just started, and I had met one of the guys. So they used to do these volunteer bottling days. And so you'd go out for the day and just for 8 hours, just bottle beer all day long. But at the end, the guy, one of the brewers, he would go next door and cook a meal. And so about like eight of you would be sitting around this big table just eating this meal. And then you'd get to take home like a case of bottles that were no fills or whatever. And it was a very cool experience. But I got to do that a couple times before I ended up opening up the granary. So I would
absolutely volunteer to do that today if it was an option. Yeah, no, fantastic.
the beer was a very good reward, because about halfway through the day, I was like, what did I get myself into? It was, you know, it was like 30 plus degrees out, and you're sweating and bottling. But yeah, it was great.
I don't know if there was anything you came into the conversation with an intention to raise that we haven't had the chance to cover, but
no, I don't think so. I mean, I think we're just really appreciative of, you know, the response we've had the last couple of months. We've, you know, I've been brewing these beers since last April or so. And so I think for me, it's been a really nice validation that, you know, the stuff that I'm putting out, people are appreciating. And I think it's just getting out to a bit of a wider audience. And that's been a really humbling thing. And so I hope that people stick with us. Obviously, as we're coming out of lockdown and more breweries are making beer again, and, you know, people's choice, you know, just it's ever expanding. It seems like more and more places are trying to do these kind of, you know, modern stuff. And, thankful that people have given us a try. You know, I know I can't tell you how many times I've read on like an Instagram review or an Untappd review, oh, never heard of these guys, don't know where they're from, you know, where's Durham, I don't know. So it's been cool to see like people down in London or wherever, like drinking some of our stuff. So that's been really cool.
But I mean, the fantastic thing about a consumer product is it does speak for itself, doesn't it? There's nowhere to hide. There's no sort of marketing gimmickry that can protect you from putting out bad beer. So the fact is your beers are wonderful, and people really appreciate them. So on behalf of the craft beer community, thanks for what you're doing. It's brilliant. So I do have a wrap-up question for you, Alex, which I've previewed to you, which is, what would be your ultimate happy hour? Whereabouts, who would you be drinking with, and perhaps most importantly of all, what would you be drinking?
Oh man, that is a great question. Well, I have multiple answers for that, but I'll just do one. So there's a place in the U.S. called Bend, Oregon, up in the Northwest, and it's this little mountain town, and they just have more breweries per capita than any place in the U.S. If you know Deschutes Brewery, that's where they're based out of. There's quite a number of really, like 10 Barrel, there's some really well-known breweries up there. Yeah, you're just up in the mountains, it's beautiful scenery. Almost everybody's on holiday, so everybody's just so friendly and happy. And just walking to these breweries that are just ginormous and just are all producing just amazing top-notch beer. And you just sit outside with your dog and have the snow-capped mountains in the background, perfect temperature outside. I think that'd definitely be the where. I would say definitely my wife and our son. And then I've got a couple of buddies back in the U.S. that haven't seen for a while. So a couple of friends from the U.S. I think would be up for joining me for that. And I think what I was drinking, I'd want to be drinking lots of different things, but there is a beer that you can actually get out there by a brewery called Boneyard. And it's called, I just remember it tastes like juice. It's like a double IPA, but it tastes like Juicy Fruit, the gum, somehow. I don't know how to do it. But it's an absolutely amazing beer. So I could drink it. It's like 8.5%, but it's literally, you can just drink it all day long.
Perfect. All right. Well, that's a great answer. Thanks so much, Alex. Thank you very much for your time. You've achieved almost the impossible, which is to reinvent a cask brewery as one of the leading UK craft breweries. You know, I love what you're doing there. Very much looking forward to watching it develop this year. Hope I catch you for a beer at some point the next time I'm up in the Northeast. But it's been a real pleasure chatting to you this evening. So thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rob. And yeah, please, when you're up, just let us know and you can come by the shed and have a beer. So.
I'll take you up on that. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Rob.
Coming up in the next few weeks, we have interviews with Duration, Neptune and Piglove. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you decide to subscribe to the podcast so you receive each episode automatically every Tuesday morning. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and leave us a review in your podcast app. It really helps others to discover the show. This Week in Craft Beer was established in January 2020 to promote the independent UK craft beer scene via a free weekly newsletter published every Monday. The newsletter includes the key new beer releases from the previous week, as well as an extensive directory of web shops and other craft beer news. As things open up again, we will also feature a detailed events calendar, taproom directory, and taproom reviews. You can register to receive this by email every Monday morning at thisweekincraft.beer.